The holidays are expensive. You're paying for gifts, travel, decorations, food, and before you know it, you've blown way past what you were planning to spend. Don't start the new year off with bad money vibes. Download Rocket Money to stay on top of your finances. The app pulls your income, expenses, and upcoming charges into one place so you can get the clearest picture of your money. It shows how much to set aside for bills and how much is safe to spend for the month so you can spend with confidence. No guesswork needed. Get alerts before bills hit, track budgets, and see every subscription you're paying for. Rocket Money also finds extra ways to save you money by canceling subscriptions you're not using and negotiating lower bills for you. On average, Rocket Money users can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Start the year off right by taking control of your finances. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Hello and welcome to the Goalkeepers Union podcast, Between the Sticks. Me, Matt Beadle, here with the well-read voice of goalkeeping, Richard Lee.
Good day, sir.
It is well-read today, right? Because, listen, it's time. You keep talking about it, so it's about time that you went and gave the book a proper plug.
Yeah, well, I feel like I've been asking you for a long period of time, and finally you've given in, so I do appreciate that. It is true. I have a book out, or I've had a book out for about 8 years now. So for those who want to check it out, it is called Graduation, Life Lessons of a Professional Footballer. It's available on Amazon. The book essentially is a book about goalkeeping. It was a story of a season I had at Brentford. Didn't have a particularly good start where I was dropped early on, had several different issues throughout the season, injury issues. Some twists and turns. What I've done within the book is then link a lot of psychology into the book itself. So a lot of neuro-linguistic programming. And I try and make it an interesting read with it being a bit of a story, but touching on a few key elements within it. So it tends to have been well received by a lot of goalkeepers, certainly a lot of top pro goalkeepers, which was quite nice and obviously quite a compliment. So yeah, if there's goalkeepers listening that are keen to know a little bit more, then check it out. It got some good reviews, thankfully, on Amazon, and it's still selling even today. I get my quarterly report through and it still sells about a book a day. So there you go.
A book a day.
Yes.
I tell you what, you are a high flyer.
I am earning about £1.07 commission per day right now, Matthew.
Wasn't it at one stage, correct me if I'm wrong, like at the top of the charts
it
or something?
It was the top of the sports charts of Amazon. So it was when I think Sir Alex Ferguson had a book out, Paul Scholes, and I had a day where I was on Soccer Saturday, I was in the Mirror, I was in the Sun, and so this one day it went a little bit crazy, and obviously if you have a good day you can get to the top of the rankings, which it did, and obviously it's dropped down since then quite considerably, but it's still going strong. It was a lot of fun writing it, a very bizarre season, but like I say, it was quite nice to touch on a lot of goalkeeping psychology.
And just to finish, so you wrote this when you were still playing, and the reasons behind it were just because it was such a frantic season.
Do you know what? I didn't even mean to write it. It sounds ridiculous, but I went on holiday after a frantic season and I was away for 2 weeks, decided to have 2 weeks of just chilling out. I was lying by the pool, had my BlackBerry, my trusty BlackBerry.
Wow, that is a long time ago.
And I wrote the entire book on my BlackBerry.
Really?
40,000 words on my BlackBerry. So because I'd planned to just have 2 weeks of just switching off, I'd had a few injuries and I wanted to just to reset a bit. And I just started writing. And before I knew it, I was really enjoying writing about it. It's quite cathartic. So before I knew it, I was a couple of days into the holiday. I was lying there, getting a tan, just enjoying myself and actually really enjoyed writing it. So it was a mixture of golf and writing a book for 2 weeks. And I finished it by the end of the holiday.
Where were you?
Florida.
Oh.
So yeah, it was delightful.
Your thumbs must have been properly tiresome because BlackBerries aren't big. If I type, I need to type on a computer.
Yeah, I do now. And you know, it's weird though, isn't it? I mean, now everyone's obviously iPhones or Androids or what have you. But back then, of course, BlackBerries were quite big. And yeah, I love the keyboard on that. And for whatever reason, I think it was more the fact that just rather than sat up typing, I was literally lying on a sun lounger for 2 weeks and just deciding just to try and give my body a bit of a rest. And it was just something to do. And like I said, I quite enjoyed it because it was something that, you know, I haven't studied for a long time now. But yeah, being able to go through the season, live some of the memories again, because it was a season, without giving too much of the book away, but we beat Everton in the cup. And there were some memorable nights. There was a night in particular we beat Charlton. I made 3 penalty saves in a row in a penalty shootout, which was live on Sky. Got on Soccer AM Techers. And it was just one of them seasons. The most bizarre things happened during the season. So it was quite nice reliving a lot of the memories.
Okay. Well, if, like me, you've not read the book yet, go get it. Amazon, yeah?
It is Amazon, yes.
Okay. Indeed. And if you have
Kindle,
read it,
you can get it on Kindle. I think it's on iTunes, I believe. It's all over the place.
It's all over the place. It's everywhere. Give Rich his quarterly bonus. And if you have read it, of course, let us know what you think. @GKUnion, hello @goalkeepersunion.net. Okay, mate, another busy weekend in the world of goalkeeping. We're going to start with those who have returned. Alisson was back for Liverpool, and this is a funny one because he was always going to be back. He's always going to be the first choice. But Adrian, in any other scenario, has been the goalkeeper since the start of the season. Liverpool hadn't lost with him in goal.
No, 100%
record. 100%
record. Yeah, phenomenal. Look, a massive credit to Adrian because I said, and I think I was quoted on the radio station that I'm with before the season, saying Liverpool's biggest issue will come if Alisson gets injured. And I said this literally a week before he got injured. And the reason being, they hadn't really recruited in that department as a backup, certainly when Mignolet at the time was on his way off or might have even just left. So you felt like they were really bare in the goalkeeping department. And really, bringing in Adrian, it wasn't necessarily good recruitment, in my opinion, because it was almost last minute and they were looking who's available. Thankfully for them, Adrian was available, hadn't had a pre-season, steps in. So for him to have done what he's done, and by the way, he is a very good goalkeeper, don't
you? Surely
that
counteracts what you were saying last week about Michel Vorm, though, when you're saying it's not good recruitment. The fact that he was there, does that not make it great recruitment? Because he was the perfect number two, no?
Well, would you say that? I mean, is he a goalkeeper that's fantastic with his feet? Is he a goalkeeper that fits Liverpool's style of play? I would argue not. If anything, look, he's made mistakes this season because of that. Now, look, they've won all 8 games. So for a goalkeeper not to have a pre-season, for a goalkeeper who hadn't had to play with his feet as much as Alisson does or anywhere near what Liverpool would want him to do, for him to come in and have done what he's done, absolutely phenomenal. Now, the second that Alisson's fit, he was always going to play because Alisson suits the way Liverpool want to play. There is an irony in that the first game back that Alisson has, it then ends the run of 17 wins that they've had, and certainly 8 wins, obviously, in a row under with Adrian in goal. But look, it's got nothing to do with Alisson. Alisson on the day was fine. Didn't have a lot to do, in truth. United played well, but certainly he didn't have a great deal to do. And as you'd expect, the distribution was fine. It looks like he's come through without any further injury. So Liverpool would be pleased with that. And no doubt he will now establish himself as the firm number one and go on and have a very good season. But yeah, look, a word on Adrian. Bearing in mind he was brought in last minute, I did question Liverpool's recruitment strategy. I thought that really they should have been looking at someone in the summer. I thought someone like, whether it was a Neil Etheridge coming in as a two or a Jack Butland, in the end, Adrian's come in. And what he's done, if nothing else, has secured himself as a really strong number two, not just for this season, but I think for next and maybe even the season after.
Okay, well, another goalkeeper who returned this weekend was Tim Krul for Norwich. They were 3 defeats on the bounce. Funnily enough, they've got a saying in Norwich, and it's along come Norwich. And the theory goes that whenever there's a record to be beaten, a record to be broken, or a record to be started, along come Norwich to be the guys who assist in that, be it a negative or a positive. 2 teams without clean sheets this season, Bournemouth and Norwich. Along come Norwich, 0-0.
Indeed, and so what this says to me as well is, look, it's very easy to look at a goalkeeper's game and look at the obvious things. Look at the saves, look at the distribution, look at the corners they come and catch. But actually, something that's hard to quantify is the impact they have on the team. And there's a certain feeling you get, I would say, about certain goalkeepers. I always use Peter Schmeichel as an example because I think most people had the same feeling I had, which was when he was in goal, you just felt safe. You felt like, and even when he made an error, you didn't feel nervous. It was almost like, oh, it's fine, it's Peter Schmeichel. Like, he's the most solid goalkeeper, the most reliable goalkeeper you could possibly have. For me, Tim Krul's got an element of that, and he's certainly had it for a long period of time now. You just feel quite safe with him in goal. Now, this isn't the Tim Krul of years ago with the athleticism that he might have had beforehand. Like, he is a bit older now. He's had his injury problems, but when he's in the team, I think the character that you're going to get is that much bigger. And that's nothing against any Norwich goalkeeper that's come in and maybe that hasn't quite happened for them, McGovern being a good example. I just think with Tim Krul, what you've got is such an experienced player. He's played in World Cups. He's played at the very highest level. He's got the experience to step into an environment like that and put in a solid display and impact those around him, impact his back four.
And another man who hasn't come in this weekend, but speaking of impacting your back four, Lukas Fabianski, of course, was doing that at West Ham. He's now out, it looks, until the new year. In his place, Roberto has come in. We spoke about him a few weeks ago, but it's just quite interesting, and this could be purely a coincidence, but since Roberto has come in, actually the game before he came in, they lost 4-0 to Oxford in the EFL Cup. He then replaced Fabianski against Bournemouth. They drew that game 2-2. The next game, they lost to Palace at home, and of course at the weekend, they lost to Everton 2-0.
Yeah, look, how often do you see it where a player maybe gets fully valued the moment they get injured? Now, I say that, he was already valued. Fabianski's been brilliant since he's been at West Ham. I think most West Ham fans would agree that since the moment he's joined, he's been their star player. And he was certainly the star player for Swansea the season they went down. He was excellent that season as well. So, look, it's tough. When you're stepping in for a goalkeeper that has, I suppose, that kind of credibility and that kind of equity with the fans. I use that expression, like they love him that much. It's always tough. I've had it on two occasions personally, where when I joined Brentford and the goalkeeper before me was Wojciech Szczesny, who they absolutely adored. And you feel like you're starting on the back foot to an extent because you're stepping in for someone who's a bit of a legend at the club. And even though they'd been there a season, he was absolutely adored by the Brentford faithful. Suddenly I step in, have a bad game or two, and you could imagine that the fans were on my back. Similarly, when I felt like I had to step in for Ben Foster at Watford, you're very aware that you're stepping into the shoes of someone who's a fan's favourite, a crowd favourite. And I just wonder whether that's happening at West Ham, that Fabianski's got such pedigree, he's so highly thought of, that if you're stepping in for Fabianski, it's an almost impossible task. And of course, you get a couple of results that go against you. No doubt Roberto's going to be very nervous going into the next game. Fans are going to be a little bit nervous, and it could be a really tough time this for West Ham.
The last man to come in of note this weekend, James Shea of Luton. I think it was last week we spoke about Simon Sluger, the goalkeeper they brought in for a record fee. He's had a very indifferent campaign thus far. James Shea was pivotal in their promotion last season. He's had to wait patiently. He's only played in the Carabao Cup. He came back in against Bristol City. 3-0 Luton, clean sheet.
Indeed, a game that I was at. So it's a game that... No, by the way, I love watching him. Absolutely love watching him. And I'm trying to think of the right way to say this, but James Shea, for me, when I look at goalkeepers, effective goalkeepers, he's up there. Because to give you an example, at the weekend, he was playing on the front foot. For a start, ball at his feet, so comfortable, making the right decision, right time, allowing Luton to build very productively, getting out to fullbacks, centre-backs, and always the right decision, the right pass, first and foremost. In terms of crossing, he came for his crosses, collected them well, a couple of good punches as well, made a brilliant save onto the post at a vital time in the game, was a big presence back there. Now, for me, and this is something that a lot of goalkeepers will relate to, looking at James Shea, he's not a 6'6" goalkeeper. He's not built like a brick. He's just a very effective goalkeeper, gets about his job very well, doesn't kick it 70 yards, you know, he kicks it very accurately, but maybe not as far as some goalkeepers. But annoyingly, it's the kind of goalkeeper that maybe will get overlooked because he's not your 6'5" monster of a man that's in goal, that's kicking it 80 yards. He's a great technician. He does things very, very well. There's a reason that Luton got promoted last season. They were so solid defensively, and he was a massive reason that was the case. But what happens? They go and bring in a record signing in the summer to replace him. All of a sudden, they've now realised that the four games he's played, yes, they lost to Leicester in the Cup, they won the other two in the Cup, and of course now a brilliant win at the weekend, their first clean sheet of the season, and you just see the impact that he's had, and the fans absolutely adore him and adored his performance as well. So, look, absolutely delighted for him. And I just hope, I mean, a lot of goalkeeper enthusiasts will watch it and they'll see exactly what he brings to the team. But I've got no doubt there'll be a few scouts that would be watching that in the stand. And they wouldn't have even noticed his performance because he doesn't look like what a lot of the scouts want to see in goal, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. So is there in this an element of mismanagement? I'm not saying that Simon Sluger is a bad goalkeeper, but who's made the decision here? Is it purely one of those things where you stepped up a level and just psychologically you think, oh, we should probably strengthen?
What it'll be is, and look, the way I see it is everyone has potential, a certain amount of potential, and some people get close to maximising it, some don't. Now, I would argue that James Shea, his potential is going to be less than Simon Sluger, for obvious reasons. Simon Sluger is that bit bigger, probably a little bit more powerful, can kick it a little bit further. So actually, if Simon Sluger maximised his potential in the same way that James Shea did, then Simon Sluger's a better goalkeeper. It's as simple as that. And that's what a lot of the bigger clubs are looking for now. You look at the recruitment policy of the top clubs. There are some out there, I won't name names, but they won't bring on a goalkeeper who's going to be less than 6'3". Because they see, well, it's time wasted trying to promote a kid and work with a kid who's not going to be that size. So they'll kind of do all the testing early on at the age of 10, 11 years old to make sure they're working with a kid that's going to be at least big enough for their team. So that's almost the first port of call. As long as you're going to be big enough, then we'll decide whether we're going to work with you or not. Then they'll look at the biomechanics of the kid. Is it somebody that they feel is going to have the athleticism, the dynamic power in order to then produce them and work with them? Are they going to have the right attitude? And there's all these different boxes that need ticking. The sad thing is, a lot of goalkeepers that are playing now, and certainly James Shea fits into this category. By the way, I fit into this category. You wouldn't get past stage one now. I was so lucky to get signed pro. And even when they were deciding whether I should get pro or not, and I found this out later on because somebody that was in the meeting told me that it was a split vote, interestingly. It was a split. And this was back in the times of Graham Taylor, Kenny Jackett. There was a youth team staff, Gary Johnson, of course, manager now of Torquay, but has been in the league before. He was my youth team manager. Anyway, there was six on the committee and it was a split vote, 3-3. Now, thankfully, they decided to give me the contract and thankfully I had a career. But at the time, time. The big reason as to why three of them decided not to give me the contract was because I was 5'11", managed to make it 6 foot in the end, but 5'11", which again, for a goalkeeper now, how many 5'11 goalkeepers do you see? James Shea is, I would say, 5'11", 6 foot-ish. You don't see many of his size anymore, unfortunately, because it's absolute, for me, absolute nonsense, because there is... I talk about effective goalkeeping. Whether you're 6 foot or 6 foot two, who's it gave the quote? It's the size of a Cadbury's cream egg. You know, it makes no real difference.
That's the difference between Courtois and Jordan Pickford, Gareth Southgate.
Yeah. There you go. Well, look, but there is. That's the point. It's actually, it makes no real difference. It's more visually. You look at a goalkeeper, and I think so many of us, so many managers have a Peter Schmeichel modelling goal. They want to see a Peter Schmeichel in goal. They don't want to see a James Shea, even though a James Shea might be so much more effective than 80% of the other championship goalkeepers. It's a visual thing, which for me is disturbing.
I would love to have been in that meeting, by the way, with Graham Taylor and the rest of them. Literally a case of in favour of Richard, say aye. Right. People put their hands up.
I mean, it's a different subject, but you know, that was one of the most. It's one of the most frightening days, and so many go through. So many go through it every year. The day where they decide whether you're going to get a pro contract or not, and literally you walk into the room. We're all lined up, 12 of us. It's like the X Factor. You go in. There's a panel. You stand there, and I remember being so nervous, and you could see there was three different sections on the desk, one with a sheet of paper, one with like a small envelope, and one with a big envelope. And basically what it was sheet of paper was thanks but no thanks. The small envelope was, we're going to give you what's called a third year, which basically means you continue your apprenticeship for one more year. Or the bigger one was a pro contract. Now, I noticed, I was one of the first in, I noticed, I think there were six big ones, and there was then a couple of smaller ones, and then there was a lot of sheets of paper. And thankfully, I was given one of the big ones, and I was given a three-year contract. But yeah, it's a really bizarre
so they
situation.
They tell you
that it's very short and sharp, because look, it's a horrible day, because you can imagine... As happy as I was, there were so many people upset that it's hard to actually be overly like overjoyed. You ring your parents, of course, and I was buzzing. But at the same time, I'm seeing lads that I've played football with for the past 5-6 years in some cases in floods of tears, because they've just been told their dream's over, or they feel that it's over in that moment. So yeah, horrible day. But of course, it's a vital day. And it's one of the many things, the roller coaster of being a professional footballer. Most pros will tell you, most remember that day. It'll be one of the most memorable days of their life. Let's just say that.
Incidentally, and this is purely coincidence, by the way, we talk about this in this week's podcast with Nick Pope, of course.
Yeah, brilliant podcast, by the way. He gave us so much of his time. Definitely worth a listen.
He did. And just to finish very quickly on this, and this is probably a conversation for another day, but do you genuinely believe that if you had a chance now, you wouldn't make it?
Genuinely believe that, yeah. Because I think biomechanically, like, I had a lot of injuries, and part of that was due to hypermobility, which again is something they test. And I think now the fact that I had the hypermobility, I think that would have worked against me. And the fact that, you know, I'm 6 foot on the dot. It's actually a true story. I'm 6 foot in the morning. You shrink during the day. I'm 5 foot in the evening. 5'11" in the evening. That's a true story. You shrink during the day. Your spine compresses slightly, so you lose about a centimetre. So I'm 6 foot when I wake up, and then I'm not by the evening. But the reason they signed me, and again, true story, was my first ever session with Watford. And at the end of the session, I had a good session. I was 10 years old, 11 years old. And it was Stuart Murdoch. Some will remember him. He was manager of Wimbledon, a couple of other teams. Mm. But he pulled me at the end, really impressed with you. How tall is your dad? I was like, what? He goes, how tall is your dad? I said, he's 6'4". Okay, how tall is your mum? 5'6". Yeah, all right, we'll sign you.
No.
Yeah.
Just figured out the average.
Yeah. Looked at it, thought I'd be as tall as my dad. And the funny thing is, I've got three brothers. They're all 6'4", and I'm the runt of the family. 6 foot on the dot.
Bada boom, bada bing. It's only a keeper caper.
It's been a good show this week. We've not really focused on any flaws that may have occurred during the weekend. So we're going to flip keeper capers to another positive. Alan Julian.
Amazing.
FA Cup tie against Sutton United, his former club, for Billericay. He comes up for a corner in the dying moment and nods one in.
You have to watch this. It's Didier Drogba-esque. So the ball whipped in. And do you know the bit for me is, look, Alan Julian had a brilliant career, done very, very well, played league football, of course, and now he's played for Billericay for a period of time, a number of years now, must be 5 years at least, maybe longer, don't quote me on that. But again, a bit of a Billericay legend, comes up for the corner, ball whipped in. For me, it's the power that he gets in terms of his leap. He jumps so high, but it's not a bullet header, it's a little deft flick, and it then brushes the post on the way in. But it's quite a slow header. In fact, I spoke to him on the breakfast show, and I think we're going to play a bit of that footage, but it's such a deft header. Kisses the post, goes in. For me, it was actually the fact that he runs off and celebrates and he looks shattered. I think the fact he's had to come up the whole way of the field first, he looks absolutely shattered. I then found out it wasn't actually the fact that he'd run so far. It was the fact there was such a big bundle, he was suffocating. underneath the bundle.
Really?
He was suffocating because everyone was going so crazy. The fact that he's now taken it to a replay, they've still got a chance of making the first round proper, which, by the way, for Billericay is huge. They might have a potential change in ownership. Of course, if you make the first round proper, you've got the potential of an Ipswich, a Sunderland, you know, one of the big boys, which financially could be huge for the club. So this, look, this could be a really, really, well, it could be a priceless header.
Absolutely. It's 2 years, by the way. It's not 5 years. He's been there since 2017, but you're close. You're nodding at me. You don't believe me.
I don't believe you, no. Cause...
I'm going to quickly check that. Yeah, he was at Bromley between 2015 and 2017. He signed for Billericay Town in 2017.
Okay,
well, we'll ask him.
We'll ask him. Yeah. We will indeed.
We'll ask him.
I might text him in a minute.
Actually, do. Text him live on air right now and we'll get an answer.
We'll get an answer.
Probably be in training. But just we'll get on to the chat. Like you said, you spoke to him on Love Sport Breakfast. But... this just remains still one of football's wonderful things, doesn't it? When a goalkeeper scores, everybody just goes nuts.
Of course, always. It's so rare that it happens. And in this fashion as well, like we think of some of the ones gone in years gone by and you get the odd great one. I remember Paul Robinson with a brilliant header for Leeds, but it's just so rare. And, you know, the amount of time they come up and you get all that excitement and then the cross comes in, it's absolutely nowhere near them. Or if it is near them, it makes no difference whatsoever. But the fact that he's got up and the technique, because this is it as well. Like, I know it's... you know, there's actually something to it. To get up and to head of the ball, you never do it in training, ever. So it's a technique that you won't have practiced, but then the actual header is a brilliant header. It's just such a deft flick into the corner. It would have been something that Harry Kane would have been so proud of.
Yeah, absolutely. And that first round draw is actually today. So they are in the hat. By the time people listen to this, they may know who Billericay might face. But you spoke to Alan Julian, like you said, on the Love Sport Breakfast Show on Sunday morning. Here's what he had to say.
I've looked at the gaffer. It's the last minute. I said, shall I go? He went, yep, get yourself up there. And one of the lads said to me, Jules, if you can just try and block their centre-half for me, I'll run in and score. And I thought, you know what? That's not a bad idea. I'm not really too sure what I'm doing up here, so I'll do that. The ball's come in and I thought to myself, I've got a chance here. And I've just thrown myself at it. And it's hit sort of the side of my head. And I didn't think it had much power on it, Rich.
No, so, I know.
It bounced out. Yeah, it bounced down. I thought someone else must have volleyed it in or something. And then everyone shouted at me and I thought, I've done it. I've actually done it.
And to finish this weekend's show, we are going to talk about a certain individual that I just think we're never, ever going to stop talking about. 41 years old now. He turns 42 this season. Gigi Buffon, back in goal for Juve, a phenomenal save in the dying moments in their game with Bologna.
Yeah, do you know what? The obvious thing to say is, for his age, is no, not even for his age. This is a brilliant save. The fact, if you watch it again, I'll tell you the most impressive thing for me, is not just the agility, not just the athleticism, top hand save, under the bar, he reads it. If you see, just as it's being struck, he's already started to go because he's read it. He knows there's only one place it can go. And this is where the 41 years come into play, because this is experience. This is reading the game. This is goalkeeping intelligence at its finest. And then it's everything else that follows thereafter. And you're right, it wins them the game. It's a fantastic save. And it just shows that even at his age, it's going to break down a lot of barriers for people that believe that when you hit 30, 35, that you're done. Look, with goalkeeping, the truth is you can go on a lot longer. Yes, your power may diminish ever so slightly, but like Buffon's showing, that actually if you keep working hard and you keep the enjoyment first and foremost, then there's no reason you can't go on to your 40s.
Federico Santander was the guy with the overhead kick for Bologna. It's maintained Juve's unbeaten streak so far this season, and they're managing him well as well, because Wojciech Szczesny is obviously, of course, the other goalkeeper there at the moment. They're sort of in and out, so they're both taking turns. Szczesny, to be fair, prior to the international break, made a bit of a joke that he's the best goalkeeper in the world because he's kept Buffon on the bench, because he kept Alisson on the bench at Roma. You never encountered him, right? So you were a crossover.
We were crossover, yes. Yeah. So literally, he was on loan to Brentford, went back to Arsenal, where, of course, he then got himself in the team at Arsenal that following season. So, yeah, but it's kind of, we crossed paths without necessarily being in the same squad.
Okay, well, the fact that they're toing and froing with those goalkeepers is proving to work very well for Juve. But just to finish on Buffon in particular, the mindset thing for me, and I know we talk about mindset a lot, but the fact that he left Juve almost as his final hurrah, went to PSG, he's obviously been at PSG and thought, do you know what? I feel like I can continue. I want to go back to Juve. It's just incredible to think that at 40 years old, he did that.
I mentioned the point about enjoyment, and I think this is something that we can all appreciate and we can all agree with, I guess, is that if you enjoy something, you're going to have motivation towards wanting to be better at what it is that you do. And I think that's the key thing. One of the biggest problems with older goalkeepers isn't necessarily a physical issue. I mean, in my case, it was because of injuries. But if you haven't had injuries, it won't necessarily be a physical issue. In terms of your power output, it might be very similar to what you were in your 20s. There's going to be a lot of other things that are going to benefit. Of course, your game knowledge, your game management is going to be that much better. The biggest issue is often enjoyment. It's often the fact that you've done it for so long, it might start to feel like a job. You might start to get a bit bored of it. You know, he's been in this situation so many times, it might get a bit repetitive. And you might think, actually, I'm ready for the next chapter in my life, which I could appreciate, even at 32. And even, obviously, injuries played their part. But I started to feel a bit like that, where you felt, actually, I've done this for so long. I want a change. I want to experience something different. However, you get the impression watching him that he still absolutely adores what he does. And you get the impression that he could have another few years left in him, which is crazy to think. But the fact that he's making saves like he's making, the fact that he's still playing at the level that he's playing, depending on what he wants to do over the next few years, if he still maintains that enjoyment, maybe it won't be that he stays at Juve for the next 5 years, but why not go down a division? If you absolutely love what you do and it's not about the money, then why not play at a great level until you're 45, 47? There's no reason why you can't.
Yeah, we can only hope that he just continues. I think everybody in the goalkeeping world, everybody in the footballing world, to be fair, doesn't want him to stop. You're putting your finger up at me again.
Yeah, no, one other person I want to mention this week, Edison.
Okay, I was going to get onto that, mate.
Oh,
wait, that's absolutely fine.
Just wanted to make sure, just in case you missed him out, right, because I wanted to make a note of him as well this week. He's another one that, look, we talk about him a lot on this show, rightly so. Again, look, City have a win, and it's one that will go down at the end of the season as a comfortable 2-0 win away at Palace. It wasn't that at all. Now, Hennessy played very well, by the way, in the first half, but when City looked a little bit shaky, which they would be on the back of the last couple of weeks, this is when the likes of Edison, this is where they earn their money for me, and this is why, for me, Edison now is top three in the world. And it's saves like that at the weekend. We know what he's like with his feet, but actually the two saves he made at the weekend, both absolutely phenomenal.
Well, if that goes in, that header from Benteke, main one you're talking about, obviously just came on his first touch. If that goes in, like you said, City suddenly think, oh, crikey, they're going to get back into it. We're going to be 12 points adrift of Liverpool before they play Man United. It was just an incredible save that didn't really, as we know, get that much attention. Throughout the Twitter sphere and goalkeepers, absolutely, it got the attention, but the commentators didn't really reference it.
No, I know, and that's why I wanted to make a mention. I thought you might have forgotten it, you see, but of course you wouldn't have.
I never forget, mate.
Of course you don't. So no, I wanted to make a mention because a brilliant save, athleticism, technique, power, it had everything. And I just think, I say that, but especially how many times we've seen that with a team that are on a bit of a dodgy run. And do you know what? That save, with City now winning that game, they're going to have the belief again. Yes, they're struggling defensively at the moment, but it's that kind of moment in a game where you go on and win the game, where all of a sudden the tide turns a bit. And as you mentioned, it could have been 11 points. Now it's 6 points. You know, they have that win. Liverpool only get a draw, and suddenly City, you would feel, are right back in it. And arguably Edison's save or saves played a big part in that.
Yep, well, that's it this week, Richard.
Fantastic.
Off to write another book. Will you do a sequel, by the way?
I've got another book in me, but not yet. Maybe a few years down the line when... maybe a few years down the line, but it'll be something goalkeeping related. I've got a few good ideas.
All right, let me know if you need someone to publish that for you.
I think we could. In fact, we can make a good one together. We should do that at some point.
We should do that, yeah. Mm. Yeah. Something to ponder.
Indeed.
Perhaps. Well, this has been the Goalkeepers Union podcast, Between the Sticks, for another week, in association with GK Icon, Goalkeepers 365, and Love Sport Radio. We will see you next week.